This is Mike Consul. Thank you for listening to this episode. I want to tell you a story that dates back a long time. It's a personal story that dates back a long time with me, decades, in fact. I was in college at the time. It lives with me today and will live with me the rest of my life. As I was saying, I was in college at the time and I received a handwritten stamped envelope of the kind that were very common back then. This is pre-internet. It was sent to me by my mother. And inside, along with a short, very short letter that said, "Michael, I think you might be interested in this," was a full page from the Sun Bulletin newspaper published out of Binghamton, New York, which is the area I grew up in. She had torn that out of the newspaper, folded it up, put it on the envelope with that little note. So I unfolded that page, and there was a profile about a literature professor from the State University of New York at Binghamton. That literature professor was named Larry Y. Woody. It was a good profile. Had a picture of him kind of looking diagonally towards the photographer, squinting in his characteristic fashion. He always had kind of that look about him, that bit of a squinty look. And there was one thing in particular that I remember from that article, which I'll tell you about in a minute, but I actually held on to that profile. And I was a little surprised that she sent it to me because I was studying journalism at the time to become a newspaper reporter. And I had no aspirations to become a novelist, at least not at that time. In fact, I thought that was something that was beyond me, so I never even really thought about it. And I was too focused on getting my studies done and becoming a newspaper reporter. So I thought it was a little bit odd that she sent it to me. But on the other hand, I read it with great interest. I folded it up and I put it away and held on to that newspaper clipping for many, many years. I think I still have it to this day buried in some of my archives on a shelf in the garage. And the thing that Larry Y. Woody talked about in that article that really stuck with me, there are many things that were referenced by the reporter, but the one thing he said that really stuck with me was, he said the proper way to write a novel is to write it for one person. It might be a friend, might be a sibling, it could be a parent, could be a significant other, a spouse, but the idea is to actually write it just for one person. Not be writing it for a bunch of disembodied people or writing to the market, some market that is perceived to be one that would receive it well. Many years later, when I had finished writing Hardwood, the first real manuscript that I completed, I remember approaching Larry and by email. I was able to find his email easily enough and ask him if he would take a look at it. Not expecting that he would. He had students he was teaching and he was at a different college by now. He had returned to his native North Dakota where he was poet laureate. And he said, okay, which was really surprising to me because I just didn't expect that he would have the time or the willingness. So I sent it to him, an emailed copy, and a week or two later, he wrote back and said just one thing. He didn't say it was good, didn't say it was bad, didn't have any kind of long commentary. He just said, I read the manuscript, and he said, "I don't believe the mother. I wonder why." And actually, my character in that book, the mother named Sally Tribeca, it's actually somebody who I thought was very believable. But for some reason, it didn't come off that way for Larry. And that's why we have readers, don't we? Or editors, readers, agents, people who look at the work because they see things or regard things differently than we do. And I thought it was very nice of him to do that. So now I had his email address. I didn't write back to him even as much as I wanted to write back. I didn't want to bother him, but I would have liked to have written back and said, what made her hard to believe or unbelievable to you? I didn't bother with that. I didn't want to bother him. So years later, I start this podcast, and I thought I would really like to have Larry on the podcast talking about that phrase, that philosophy he has about writing novels, that you need to pick a single person and write the novel for that person. That's the proper way to do it. That's how you're going to get the ultimate result. And I wrote that to him and said, I'd like to have you come on the program and talk about that. Because I remember I told him about the circumstance of being approached, not being approached, but I told him the story about my mother sending me the newspaper clip in the profile in the Sun Bulletin when he was literature professor at State University of New York at Binghamton. He remembered all of that, of course, and said that he was just too busy to be on the program right then, but maybe later. So I reapproached him about 6 months later, and he didn't say he was too busy, but he didn't say yes. And a few months later, I recommunicated with him, only to find out that he said that he was seeing a doctor the next day. That he said it would depend on what his oncologist had to say. I was seeing him the next day, and I said, I'm sorry to hear that, Larry. I didn't know that you were tangling with cancer. And when he wrote back, he said, and maybe this is silly, but I felt a little bit proud that a guy who makes word choices used the same word I did. He goes, I didn't know I was tangling with it either until now. And I wished him best of luck with that. Best of luck with the prognosis about the cancer he had suddenly discovered was within his system. Well, a few weeks later, I write to him again. I just said, Larry, I hope the visit with the oncologist is well and your prognosis is good. And didn't say anything about coming on the program. I just wanted to see if he was doing okay. I didn't get a response. I didn't get a response, and that's unusual with Larry because he's a gentleman. He was a gentleman, and he'd always write back. And so I don't know how long it was, maybe 10 days elapsed, and I thought, I'd try him again. And I went to write to him. And in fact, I'm not even sure if I wrote that next email. It occurred to me that, why don't I look him up on Wikipedia? Because I had this feeling, and they always have the birth and death dates of anybody on Wikipedia. And Wikipedia is very good about staying really current. I mean, you could read about somebody dying in a newspaper that day, go to Wikipedia, and the death is already recorded in there. So as I had feared when I went to Wikipedia, I saw that Larry Whitewoody had died on April 28th. And that the email I had sent him had been received, if it was received at all by his email system, then it was never read by Larry. He had already entered immortality, as I like to say, which is really disappointing. It was really sad. He was 80 years old. And I can just tell you that my interactions with him, albeit just by email, actually, the first contact I had with him was by phone. I had connected with him by phone. And let me tell you, he's a man of few words. He listens carefully, and he responds. That's when I was asking him if he'd be gracious enough to read a copy of Hardwood. And which, of course, like I said, he did. But It was a very brief conversation. He had almost nothing to say, but he was willing to read it. And he got back to me by email, so very nice. The man was a gentleman and was a celebrated writer. I mean, he was a writer's writer. The critics really, really liked Larry. He wrote a novel called Beyond the Bedroom Wall, which was a National Book Award nominee. That was in 1975. And in 1969, he had actually written a bestseller called What I'm Going to Do, I Think. And his work over the years appeared in The New Yorker, Esquire, The Atlantic Monthly, Harper's, Gentleman's Quarterly, The Partisan Review, The Paris Review. And he was the poet laureate of North Dakota from 1995 until his death on April 28th. In his most recent book, which was published only 2 weeks before he died, which is probably what he was working away on when I first approached him, and he said he was too busy at the time, probably putting closure on this book, was called A Legacy of Passion. And it was about the Scheel family, a family I don't know, the Scheel family and store franchise. So it may have been a local family. I don't know about a national, whether they were a national family or not. I've never heard of them before. But Larry was also one of the writers in residence at the University of Jamestown in North Dakota from 2007 to 2020. And, you know, the university president there named Polly Peterson said in a statement upon hearing of Larry Whitewood's death, said, Larry, and I'm quoting here, Larry was a student favorite. He shared his passionate love for writing in a way that made it fun for all learners. He believed that every student had talent, and as much as anything, he had a way of encouraging them to believe in their own unique talents. Many went on to graduate school because of his inspiration. And those who know Larry said that he inspired and mentored countless writers during his long and distinguished career. He lived on a farm with his family in Mott, M-O-T-T, Mott, North Dakota. So Larry Whitewood is not among us anymore, and I'm sorry that I didn't get to bring him on the program to get his voice recorded for myself and for you listeners, and to have him talk in some detail about this philosophy of his that he's left with us along with his works, that philosophy being the proper way to write a novel is to write it for one person. But there has to be more layers to it than that, and I never did get to have Larry elaborate on that. I don't know if you can hear it, but there's a sadness in my voice. I feel like I I know Larry. Our interactions were so few and brief, and yet I feel like I know him. And that newspaper clipping that my mother sent me so many years ago, I held on to it. And never thinking that I'd ever make any kind of contact with him, but for some reason it spoke to me, and I held on to it. And then here I am reaching out to Larry, and to have him on the program would have been an opportunity to really get to know him a bit, and to really to have an extended conversation with him, which would have been a lovely thing. And, you know, I was going to record this yesterday, but I didn't get to it. And yesterday was Mother's Day, and it was my mother who sent me that newspaper clipping. So it was interesting how the timing all converged. And it just wasn't that one of those things that my mother would normally send me. So there's something to touch me about this in multiple ways, and I hung on to that newspaper clipping, and it was always in my head. Because you know what it is when you put something away, a newspaper clipping, you file it, and then it's out of sight, out of mind. But it was always in my head. I always remembered Larry's name. As difficult as his last name is, when you look at it, you aren't sure how to pronounce it. I was told how to pronounce it, so why Woody is the proper pronunciation. At least that's my understanding. And the guy stuck with me. I hope his writing sticks with the reading public for forever. And Larry, I hope, I'm tempted to say, a man at peace. But, when people talk about being at peace, it's to me, it sounds a little too much like oblivion. I hope, Larry, that you're swimming in the pool of the eternal, and that it's everything you have ever imagined it to be. Godspeed to you, Larry. Why would he? And to all of you out there, thank you for listening.